Mr. Mumgard, good morning. You may approach and you may proceed.
Good morning. I'm Tom Mumgard. Please the court, I'm Tom Mumgard, Deputy City Attorney for the City of Omaha. I'm appearing today on behalf of the appellant, City of Omaha. This case presents what I call an extreme application of the law enforcement motor vehicle pursuit law's strict liability. The question here is, when did a pursuit begin, and was, if there was a pursuit, was any such pursuit a proximate cause of the collision? Now, the statute has been applied by this court in circumstances where we have the commonly understood pursuit with someone fleeing and police chasing. But on the other side of the coin, this court has held that an officer who is simply following a fleeing car is not in pursuit within the statute, because you have clearly identified that the strict liability statute requires certain elements to be there. And it's nuanced, as you said. It requires a nuanced application of what is or is not a pursuit.
Did the district court find that prior to the collision, the police vehicle both accelerated and turned on its lights?
No. The district court found only that prior to the collision, the driver of the police vehicle made a decision that he would pursue. The trial court never said that a pursuit actually began before the collision. The trial court described the situation as instantaneously with the attempt to stop. The fleeing driver ran the stop sign and ran into Mr. Williams. You will look throughout the opinion. I don't think there's ever a declaration by the trial court that a pursuit actually commenced. The declaration is there was a determination to pursue the man.
Well, now that wouldn't really be all that relevant, would it?
Well, certainly in any situation.
If the party fleeing or the subject of the pursuit didn't know that the police were pursuing, what the officer's mind was wouldn't have anything to do with it, would it?
I agree. The focusing on when a decision to pursue is made is completely irrelevant to the statute, because the statute requires what's called an active attempt to apprehend. The statute describes conduct. It doesn't describe decision.
I mean, if the defendant or the person being pursued never knew he was being pursued, you wouldn't have a causation issue, would you?
Well, first off, you don't have a pursuit, because the elements of the pursuit requires that the person fleeing is reacting to the chase.
Yeah.
So you don't have pursuit. And then secondly, you're correct, you don't have proximate cause, because this court has clearly identified, I think most recently, just within the last couple of months, in the McLovey-Sierra case, that if the fleeing person's conduct causes the collision, and that's not reactive to conduct of the officer, then you don't have proximate cause. And essentially, you have both of those here, in that the trial court never found a pursuit. In fact, he found a decision to pursue. Now, it's best, you know, to understand the facts. Exhibit 11, there's a couple maps there. Basically, look at the situation as a box, with Wirt Street at the bottom, Spaulding at the top, 30th Street on one side, and 28th Avenue up the other. There were two versions as to what happened that day. The officers testified that they never encountered this man until they were at the top of the box on Spaulding Street. Plaintiff, on the other hand, said that he had seen the officers encounter the man much some distance at the bottom of the box, and that they had traveled around the three sides of the box as he traveled up the left side of the box. Now, the evidence showed that for that to be able to happen, the police cruiser and the Mr. Webster, the fleeing car, would have had to be going at least 300 and some miles an hour. The trial judge...
You mean he's going up like this, and then the other car is going like that, and then hits?
They have to cover three sides as he covers one. And obviously, the speeds have to be different. And so the trial judge never says anything in his decision about the plaintiff's version of the fact. Apparently, completely rejected the plaintiff's version and looked at simply what happened right there on Spaulding Street within a block of 30th Street. What happened? The officers testified as they're driving down Spalding Street, and they see this car, which has an expired plate. And so they go within a block of 30th Street. They go, they turn on the red lights, no siren, simply to pull him over, go up, talk to the man, give him a ticket, and let him go. Now, under the case law, that's not a pursuit. That's a traffic stop. Because there's no active attempt to apprehend anybody there. There's no flight, there's no chase, and there's no active attempt to apprehend.
And your definition of apprehend is synonymous with arrest? Is that the point of this?
Well, I don't want to use the word arrest, but it's synonymous with some concept of taking a person into custody, and which separates the situation from the typical traffic stop.
Is temporary detention enough?
I don't think the case law and the statute supports that, no. Because what we're talking about here is taking one type of unusual police conduct and applying strict liability. The legislature has rejected negligence, applying strict liability. So the statute has to be read very strictly. And if you read it in that way, the temporary detention as you talk to a person and give them a ticket and let him leave, that's sufficient to be an attempt to apprehend.
Now I'm having trouble finishing the sentence. How do you describe
this? Well, you're right. Yeah, spectrum of encounters is a good term, because the police interaction with a person, a driver, runs from the gamut of following them down the street to see where they go, to pulling them over for a traffic stop, to then actually actively chasing them with the object of taking them into custody.
And now, this statute applies at some point.
The last point. Because it uses the term active attempt to apprehend. It doesn't say just apprehend. It says active attempt to apprehend, which makes some sense when you look at it as this in derogation of the common law, because the legislature was looking at a very small slice of police citizens' encounters. They weren't going to give strict liability for every encounter. And what happened in this situation is the only testimony as to what happened on Spalding Street came from the two officers. And their testimony said that within a block of 30th Street, they did nothing other than turn on the red lights. And as the trial judge found, Mr. Webster, the fleeing driver, then jackrabbited, immediately went through the stop sign, and immediately hit Mr. Williams. He then continued on. The officers all testified that until he left that collision, they had no reason to pursue him.
Would you characterize the trial court's decision as an error of law if the trial court decided that the police officers had decided to pursue and equated that with active attempt to apprehend?
I'm going to characterize the trial court's decision as a combination of error of law and error of fact, because the trial court clearly didn't distinguish what the statute requires. The trial court accepted that if you try to pull a guy over to give him a ticket, that's enough. And then if he flees, that's enough. Well, that's a misapplication of the law, because the statute clearly requires more than that.
Misapprehension of the elements of that.
So what I'm hearing is that you want us to fathom a rule on the seriousness of the incident. Here, expired license plates. What if it had been a DUI here?
All I want you to do is give the weight to the term of active attempt to apprehend that you've given in other cases. Because you have cases where a police officer is following a guy down the street who's clearly fleeing, and you have held that, no, that's not a pursuit. We've stepped one step back from here, and that the trial court said, well, you don't even have to get to the following. If you would have chased him if he hadn't collided, that's good enough. Well, that's an error of law.
What if you had the police officers right behind the person driving the car, and they flipped on the red lights, and the minute the red lights came on, he went through the stop sign and had the accident? Would that have been strict liability on a pursuit simply by flipping on the lights to tell the person, we want you to stop?
No, and that's essentially the facts of this case as you've described. That's all. There is nothing in the record to show that those officers responded in any way to this man taking off before the collision. But yet,
under this scenario, any time the police turned on their lights and an accident happened, that would be a pursuit.
True. Under that scenario, under the trial court scenario, if all you've done is turn on the lights and they jackrabbit and hit somebody, well, there's strict liability. Yeah, but that's not what the legislature described when they used some very precise terms of active attempt to apprehend. In this case, the trial court both misunderstood the facts because there's no evidence that the officers did anything to try to capture this fella before the collision, and misunderstood the elements of strict liability, because the trial court specifically said that the determination to pursue, that is, I would have chased you if you hadn't collided.
Well, I'm getting back to Judge Castle's line of questions. Are you equating apprehending to stop? I mean, if they active attempt to stop, is that sufficient?
No, because that's not what the legislature said.
So to stop and apprehend are two different things.
Yes, because every day, hundreds of times in this state, a police officer stops a person for no purpose other than to talk to him, give him a ticket, and let him go. That is
but
not
that's not that's not the case here. They stopped him for a purpose. Or saw it.
That is the case here. But their testimony was 100% that was the only thing they intended to do, is stop this guy, go up and find out why he had an expired plate, give him a ticket, and let him go. That occurs hundreds of times in Nebraska
and
every day.
If the person that's being attempted to stop flees at that point and injures a third party, how is that different in terms of the purpose of the statute from when the officers intended to stop them to make an arrest?
It's different in that the case law clearly says that you have to have two things happen at the same time. You have to have flight, and you have to have chase with this active attempt. The Perez case, the McLovey-Sierra case, of all situations where a police officer follows a guy who's clearly fleeing, but you don't have that second element. That second element is the active attempt to apprehend, which the legislature put in there to differentiate from the traffic stop that we have here in this case, and to identify the other end of the spectrum. The case law shows that there is a spectrum. Some of that stuff is pursuits, some of it isn't. The trial judge just simply ignored that element and speculated as to what the facts might be. I'm out of time. Unless there's any more questions, thank you very much. This case needs to be reversed.
Thank you. Mr. Fogarty, good morning.
Good morning. Please report. I'm Ann Fogarty, and I represent Marcus Williams together with John Nika, who's here with me today. I wanted to get a few things straight from Mr. First, he said the court never did make a finding about this idea of intent to capture. Now, this is the hound versus the fox, the hunter versus the prey, and those things come together in the intent of the fleer and the intent of the hunter. You have a pursuit. The court found, paying homage to the strict liability, he says, in so doing, this court has taken into consideration the actions and intent of both Officers Wasman and the Webster vehicle. This court, in resolving those issues, find that the officer's active attempt to apprehend is sufficiently shown by the evidence at trial. Further, both Officer Wasman and the Webster vehicle were accelerating just before the collision. Court finds the action of the fleeing Webster vehicle shows that Webster's aware he was being pursued. Words, actions, and conduct and evidence by Wiseman and Webster are sufficient in this case to give the court reason to find intent to pursue.
So, Mr. Fogarty, your view of the judge's decision is that he did specifically find both that the police vehicle turned on its overhead lights and that the police vehicle accelerated before the collision.
Yes. That's exactly the point. And the other thing I wanted to get to, but I didn't like him suggesting, is that the court supposedly found that the 28th Avenue scenario of our client, Mr. Williams, was poppycock, a concoction. He did not find that at all. And the evidence is fairly clear that he just wanted to give the police and the citizen a little bit of break and not get down and mud wrestle on that point. However, in the record, he makes that kind of clear. If you go to page 13 of my brief, you're going to find all this, but he's heard all the cases and he tells us what he wants for our post-trial briefs. He says, I know the officer made an error in his report. That was the report that said that on 28th Avenue, six stop signs were run, and then west of 30th Street, there's an accident. He's giving him a big break, because not only did he write that 2 hours after the incident, Wiseman signed off on it and then claimed at trial, well, he didn't see what he read, and the other officer, Fancher, said, yeah, but he just made a mistake. Well, you know, it's kind of like a retract confession, okay. But the judge didn't want to get into that. And then how gentle he was with the police is even more gentle with the citizen. He does not say this was a concoction, a 28th Street scenario to feed into those bad reports. He says, we know the plaintiff made an error at his deposition in regard to distances. Yeah. At his deposition, he said it was 40 feet to half block before the intersection there at Wirt. That meant he would have been going 300 miles an hour. That's a simple mistake. That trial, he says, more like a block and a half, which brings the speeds into context. Now, how many of you haven't had a plaintiff or a defendant in a deposition say something kind of stupid? Time and distance is always hard. I have an anecdotal story about a friend of mine who was very stupid. And he had another attorney on his case, and the attorney told me this. It was one of those timing of the intersection. I come from the right, you come from the left. And at the deposition, the defense attorney is trying to get him, how far back of the intersection were you when you saw the car? My fire. I don't know. He says, well, let's draw an imaginary line at the intersection from the left curb to the right curb that you were approaching. How far back from you were that? He says, I can't answer that. Why? There's no imaginary line at that intersection. So we always get into that sort of stuff. He corrected himself at his deposition, but how gentle was the court? He talked about just that little, simple, innocent mistake. Well, he didn't talk about a concoction along 28th Avenue.
Isn't the critical fact in this case is whether or not the police were pursuing Webster's vehicle or Webster in his vehicle prior to the accident?
Yes. Yes.
What's in the mind of the policeman doesn't really make any difference, does it?
Well, that's the way these are always defended. They think that they get to declare the pursuit by what's in their mind. I think it is important. And the court here did find that apprehension was in their mind. And apprehension, not just pull over.
Well, the court, you say the court found that both parties were accelerating prior to the accident.
Yes.
Okay. Was there any evidence of speed, how fast they were going?
Evidence of speed down the street?
Mm-hmm. Before yeah. the accident?
Yes. There was, and a lot of it is...
well, assuming it's a residential area...
The police said he was going 25 miles an hour after him down the Spaulding Street corridor. 25 miles an hour, 37 and a half feet per second. He said, both officers said, that around 29th is when they first saw him. This is an interesting thing because the police also declared absolute ignorance. And this is one of the things why the judge is so gentle in collapsing the thing down to 29th Street, but he was given no help. Along that corridor, you can go three blocks down to where the interstate intercepts eastward traffic. And where did Webster come upon Spaulding Street? Well, the police say about 29. Our guy says, as he's coming down 30th, about 29. That's about 6 seconds prior to 30th. Now, that's a very gentle and generous point for the court to give the police that much, and maybe he wasn't. That's why he was talking at the end of his opinion how he's got plenty of evidence here to find it. Maybe it was 28th Avenue, maybe it was 28th.
What's precisely the evidence of active attempt to apprehend? What conduct, precisely? Not what's in their mind, but what's the conduct?
Turning on their lights after at least 6 to 7 seconds following this particular man. The statute says it can be just ignoring your lights. We know the lights were on from 29th, 6 or 7 seconds. It's 265 feet to figure it out. And the court could very well have been using the inferences available to my clients prevailing on this judgment that was 12 seconds all the way up to 28th Avenue. You can take a look at the situation here and see that the policeman gave the judge no help whatsoever as to how they got there from the heavily impacted residential area on either side, north and south of that long corridor. No help whatsoever. So the ignorance or absence of evidence by people who should know better, who are making reports right much later, probably gave us that whole three blocks where the court could be making inferences of how long this lasted and how long it took for in their mind. And he found it in their mind that it was an intent to apprehend. And we know, drunk as a billy goat, no license, no insurance. This man under the Staley case, you know, he's a skittery guy. He's going to run.
Suppose you have a police car that comes upon a block party and they watch some guy stagger into his car, clearly intoxicated, and start his car and drive through the people around in the block party, and then the police turn on their red lights and the guy accelerates and hits several people. Is that a pursuit?
I would say no.
Why not?
Because
the light went on and that caused him to accelerate, and they were trying to apprehend him by turning on the light.
Because a trial court could have believed the officer's testimony, no, I did not intend to. No, I did not intend to turn on the lights and make my an apprehension.
What if they did turn on the lights, and their intent is to stop the guy from driving intoxicated, and when they turn on the lights, he slashed through the block party and hit several people?
Then the court could have said, if you watched this person, drunk as a billy goat, get into a car and you call him over, you're going to stop him, you're going to apprehend him because you've got the underlying facts.
If that person hits all those people, then the police are strictly liable for that?
Yes, they are. Okay. If the court decides on all those facts that yes, indeed, they had intended at that point to apprehend. And that's what our court found below on this case. And remember, and very gentle to everybody. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is Rent-A-Roofer, Inc. versus Farm Bureau Property and Casualty.